show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, New England Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Joining us now via the AT&T Expert Hotline is Roger. Roger Clemens. Thanks for joining the show. Roger, you still there?
There you go. I'm here.
All right. Appreciate you joining. Thanks for coming on.
You bet.
All right. So let me ask you the first question. How do people here treat you now?
They've treated me great. They've treated me from day one to even when I was a visitor. Maybe not at the ballpark when you're a visitor sometimes, but out on the street, they still appreciate my work that I did here and the restaurants we go to. And I answer to Rocket. They call me by my nickname more than my first name. So it's always been fun. Try and get up about twice a summer since I've been done playing. But fantastic.
Okay, so and even after your career, I mean, obviously a lot came out in the Mitchell report, the Brian McNamee stuff, all of that. Do people still treat you well here?
Absolutely. We pay attention to facts, partner. We get on a level playing field and pay attention to facts.
Okay. So
not a guy's trying to chase your wallet and make money off you.
Okay. So we can get to some of the facts and particulars later. What I'm interested in, though, is, your history here in Boston, the departure here was not good, Roger, and I know it was a long time ago. Okay, I covered it. I was in the middle of it. And I know it was a long time ago. How did your relationship with the team and the town get fixed? It feels like you have a good relationship.
Hey, how you doing?
It feels like you have a good relationship now with ownership in the organization. How did that get repaired?
Well, I really don't know, other than just people's talking or writing. The people that are outside the circle would have had a problem with it. So I think everybody knows. And actually, there's going to be a guy here that was assistant GM, Steve August. All you have to do is ask him about facts, too, partner. He'll let you know about it because, at one point I thought I was going to get to retire here, but a guy wanted his own team, and we went on down the road. So, but it worked out great. I should be very thankful for that because I got to play a long time.
Okay, and when you say you thought you were going to retire, are you talking about Dan Duquette? I'm even saying, Roger, after that, after the whole experience, in recent years, did Red Sox ownership reach out to you? Like, how did that whole thing get reconnected?
It was reconnected from even when I was – when I basically went back to and came out of retirement with Houston, I have to look at the times, but I can't tell you the exact dates or anything like that right now. I'm not too worried about it.
What was there anyone in particular that reached out to you on behalf of the organization to sort of say, hey, Roger, we want you back involved with the Red Sox?
A bunch of them when they were redoing the new place down in Fort Myers. Nice talking to you, Ed.
So this owner,
when we were down in, when they were doing the JetBlue Stadium, they were asking for stuff to put down there and do all kinds of things. So yeah, it's been great.
And how would you describe your relationship with, do you know John Henry? Do you know Tom Werner? Have you met those guys? How would you describe your relationship with them?
Yeah, a bunch of times. It's been great.
Okay, the Red Sox obviously have retired.
I'm on the radio right now talking to the boys.
The Red Sox, you still there?
Yes.
The Red Sox have retired a bunch of numbers up on that right field facade, Roger. David Ortiz went up this season. Wade Boggs is up there. Again, I know he's a guy you had some history with. Why isn't your number up there yet?
Say again?
Why isn't your number up on the right field facade at Fenway Park right now? Shouldn't it be up there?
Yeah, if it happens, great. I think it was great. Somebody asked me that a while back, and I thought it was awesome, like I said. When I came out of the College World Series and got here, and the clubhouse guy was paying attention to detail a little bit, and it was very exciting to walk into clubhouse when I did make it to the big team, and they had 21 there for me. So that's what I wore at Texas, so that's awesome.
So have the Red Sox talked to you at all about retiring your number? Has that conversation come up?
The guys down below have a little bit, but it hadn't came up that much. We really haven't talked about it.
When you say the guys down below, you mean the guys in the clubhouse?
Yes.
Okay, clubhouse workers.
Well, not workers. There's other guys. They're a little bit higher up in what's going on down there.
Okay. I want to get to some baseball stuff with you too, but there's been some stuff going on here in the news recently. Dennis Eckersley obviously got on a team flight recently. David Price was among orchestrated basically kind of an ambush on Eck. Do you have an opinion on how that whole thing went down?
Well, I'm not privy to it. I did an article with Dan Shaughnessy, and Dan mentioned it too, so I'm not real privy to it. But like I said, I didn't even know that Dennis was doing TV or traveling with the team. I didn't know who's allowed to travel the team, so I'm not privy to it. The only thing I can tell you is that, you know, to have David Price and Chris Sale here, it's a treat for the fans. I mean, to have these guys going out in the rotation every 5 days, it's a big treat. And if you're talking about Dennis and those two talking, whether they get crossways with each other, hopefully they mend it, because somebody like Dennis Eckersley being around, you know, even though Sale and Price are veteran guys, the young guys that are up there, that'd be a good mind to pick. I mean, Eck had a great career. That'd be, you know, like I said, it's the work I do with the Astros right now, but I probably visit with 20, 30 pitchers in the major leagues. Most of it's the mental part of the game. And when they ask a pointed question, I try and give them a pointed answer. And you have Dennis Eckersley floating around the team or whatever, I'd ask him a few questions.
Roger, did you ever have any problems with team broadcasters when you were playing?
Oh, shoot, I have no idea.
Okay, I was going to say, whole idea of Price handling it the way he did. He had a problem with stuff Eck was saying on the broadcast and, you know, confront him on the plane in front of his teammates. Do you have any opinion on, you know, doing it that way, or would you have handled it differently?
No, if you have a difference with whether it be a broadcaster or another teammate or a coach, you should deal with it. Get it out and get it done with and go on with the year. I think you're grown up. You should be able to do that.
Okay. I saw a comment today, and I know you've been doing a bunch of interviews, where you were asked about the Hall of Fame, and your percentage numbers went up this year, okay? And you said, I have zero control over that. It's not something when I started playing that I worried about making the Hall of Fame. It's not the reason why I play the game. It's not who I am. Do you think you're going to get in?
I have zero control over that, so it's not something I worry about. I'm far too busy to worry about what goes on there. The voting and everything that goes on is fantastic. The guys that vote for me that's wonderful, and I'm thankful. But other than that, I have zero control over it. So it's not something that's gonna, you know, that I'm too worried about it. I mean, like I said, that's what I did. It's not the person who I am. So I think, as you know, like you said, you covered me. You saw how intense and focused I was on the field, and I do a lot of things that I love to do off the field. So it's not like something I sit around and worry about every year.
Have you followed the results at all on a year-to-year basis?
I have not. I get a phone call one or two by some friends saying, you know, Rock and Roll is doing this or doing that, and I go, okay, thank you, and that's about the extent of it.
So do you know where your voting percentage was this past year, or someone told you that?
I have no idea.
Okay, so if I were to tell you now that more than 50% of the voters believe that you should be in the Hall of Fame, whereas, you know, a few years ago the number was basically a third. I mean, you're getting much.
Yeah.
Like
I said, the Hall of Fame is great. I know a bunch of the people up there, and that's fantastic. But again, it's a situation where I've already had a couple, two or three parties where I needed to thank a bunch of my teammates for my career. Probably six. I need to take. There's about 600. I think if you kind of figure it up over 24 years, there's about 600 guys that you really have to thank. It's not about you. The guys get up there and beat their chest a little bit, and it's not about you. It's about the guys that will never have a chance to get there that helped you have the great career that you had. And then when I think about that, I think about all the catchers I had, for sure.
So would it mean anything to you to get in?
I don't – like I said, the luster part of it's kind of already came and gone, but like I said, I have a lot of friends and family that, you know, I'd have to think about it. But, you know, just this thing I'm doing tonight is just as important. What we do for our children's charities and the stuff that we do, all of our friends and good people that know me, we have a great time, and we do things like this to help others. So we love it.
Okay, again, we're speaking with Roger Clemens. He's in town for some charitable endeavors. He's being honored tonight at Willow Bend Country Club in Mashpee. He'll be at Fenway Park tomorrow throwing batting practice to raise money for both his foundation and the Jimmy Fund, if I got that right, Roger, right?
You did, yeah. That's fun. I really appreciate you can't beat that, getting to throw batting practice at Fenway Park and the group that comes down there and the Jimmy Fund. It's just really cool. I think I'm going to come back after the batting practice And we're going to be on radio and TV because they're going to auction it off again. So I'm pretty fired up about that, too.
Is that something you do every year?
Every year. I do a bunch at home. And, of course, it was really crazy at home in Houston because, you know, the Super Bowl was in Houston. So we had, from Wednesday till Super Bowl Sunday, we had really a bunch of New Englanders and a bunch of Patriots fans that were down. Actually came to the house and hit in my personal gym. And then we took them out for a little Mexican food and sent them off to the game. It was a fun week. It a long week, but it was a fun week.
Okay, I get just a few more questions for you. We'll make it quick, okay? We'll make them nice and fast so you can get right through them. Who's the best hitter you ever faced?
Oh, man, I played 24 years, so I've faced a lot of great hitters. I mean, I tell guys, they ask about the toughest hitter, would be, you know, your power guys. We talked about, you know, most of the power guys that are swinging for power. You know, this, for example, say like an Albert Pujols, when I faced him and talked to Albert and had a chance to visit with him with some of his foundation stuff, is Albert pretty much knew I was going to give him one pitch to hit during the at-bat, and if he missed it or fouled it off, I'm probably going to get him. Conversely, especially when I was in the National League, when I came home and retired and came out of retirement, pitched for my hometown team, the Astros, the first leadoff hitter or the second guy possibly, you know, if I get in a battle with him, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 pitches, I'm probably not going to make it to the 8th inning, maybe not the 7th inning. So I'm trying to throw a pitch to one of those guys. Those contact guys probably give me more trouble than the power guys.
Okay, so not one guy in particular, not Junior Griffey, not anyone like that stuck out?
No. Okay. I got to pitch against the likes of Reggie Jackson and Don Baylor and Dave King and all these guys all the way through George Brett and then up to, you know, guys like Pujols and Griffey and all these other guys. I was, you know, with the number of years I was able to play.
Okay, next question. One game to win. One game to win. You can take any pitcher in his prime, but you can't take yourself. Who are you taking?
I don't know. I'd probably have to look at numbers from guys like, you know, Koufax or Walter Johnson or some of those guys. I got to play Christy Mathewson in the movie Cobb, you know, with Tommy Lee Jones. So when you get a chance to look at those guys' numbers, you would think you'd have one of them monsters out there.
How about guys that you saw firsthand?
Oh, man, I would have to say, you know, it'd have to be like a Randy Johnson or a Pedro or a Maddox, you know, in their prime for sure.
Okay. And last question, and I feel compelled to ask it, but where are we with the whole steroid discussion again? See, Roger, I think this is over. Like, I don't think guys hold it against guys anymore. And do people still ask you about it, and what is your answer about the whole thing?
I'm not even going to comment on it because it's ridiculous. So I don't even comment it on anymore. Like I said, we got into a situation where we had a level playing field, and we did what we needed to do. So it worked out perfectly.
Okay. Roger, listen, thanks for taking the time.
Okay, you got it.
All right, Roger Clemens joining us via the AT&T Expert Hotline. I suspect he's down at Willow Bend Country Club in Mashpee. Anything we left out there, Jimmy?
No, I think we're good.
See, so I had a feeling we were going to run into some of these obstacles because I know Roger. I covered Roger. And in the interest of disclosure, he treated me great when I started on that. But it was a long time ago. Okay, he treated me great. I always got along with him. But I also know how he can be in terms of stonewalling and just not answering questions that you ask. Even the most basic ones. Like, who's the best hitter you ever faced? That's an easy one, right? I mean, wouldn't you just say, like, Ken Griffey Jr.? Junior was impossible? How the hell do you pitch to Junior? And the Hall of Fame balloting stuff? Like,
Billy was hoping he'd say Trot Nixon.
All right, well, there you go. I gave it my best, Jimmy. What do you want me to tell you?
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzara, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And again, Roger Clemens in town at the Willow Bend Country Club down in Mashpee. He's being honored by the Red Sox tonight down there, and then will participate in a fundraiser tomorrow at Fenway Park. He'll throw batting practice to benefit the Clemens Foundation and the Jimmy Fund. And, you know, look, the guy was always stubborn. What do you want me to tell you? You ask him about the Hall of Fame, he's still not interested, which I think will be comical because he is going to get in. and let me get this off my chest, and we'll get to the Red Sox, I promise. Because honestly, they're far more interesting than Clemens. He's going to get in. He's going to get in, and when he does, he's going to say that he's grateful. Okay? But anyway, and then we'll play what he said tonight, and he'll sound like a jackass. But that's another story for another day. With the Red Sox, 617-779-0985. I have some particular thoughts on last night's game, but since a couple of you are already waiting, fire away. John and Woburn, what do you got? John.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What do you got?
So, I just have a thought here. When Pedroia comes back, I mean, what's going to happen with Bogaerts? The guy has stunk lately. I think he's going to go on the DL, and Nunez is just going to go to short.
So, John, is that what you would do?
That's what I would do. I mean, give Bogaerts a break. I mean, he plays every day for God knows why, and his hand is clearly hurting him. I'd say you just bench him, give him a two-week break, see what happens.
Okay, so I wonder about them spelling Bogaerts as well. What do you got, Sarge?
Just to touch on that, Farrell was asked today, Johnny Miller's not down there, but I did see the context of this. They said, when Pedroia comes back, will Nunez still play every day? And he said, quote, I think it'd be crazy not to have him in the lineup somewhere. My God.
Okay, so what Nunez, they're going to move
him. He's in.
Yeah, they're going to move Nunez around. They're going to give guys days off, and they should have had a guy like Nunez on the roster a long time ago. Bogaerts could use the time off. But I'd be surprised at this stage if they DL him or shut him down for any length of time. Quickly, Andrews and Haverhill.
Hey, what's going on, Maz? You know, I got a quick point about the running and the outs, and just real quick, are you? I mean, man, is it tough for you to be constantly negative every single waking second of being on the radio? I mean, they went 7 in a row before the All-Star break, and you come in saying, you see, I knew this team had more potential. Doesn't that make you more angry that they weren't playing well earlier on in the season, because now they're winning games, and I always knew they had more potential. And then they start to win, you know, these last couple games against good teams, and you're firing off a story about that they can't win low-scoring games. I mean, it never changed, buddy.
Andrew, listen, I know you think I'm negative. Believe me when I tell you that I hope they win. I hope they win. So, but part of my job is to look at the team and assess them, okay? And assess them and see what they do well and what they don't do well and whether they're capable of winning the whole thing. And so if you're offended by that, I'm sorry. You can be as offended as you want. They got thrown out 3 times on the bases last night. And to me, there's a problem there with their base running and their inability to manufacture runs at key times against good pitching could come back to bite them in the ass. They're not a perfect team. If we were in Cleveland, I'd be saying the same thing about the Indians. This is what the job is. Okay, the job is to look at the team. If you want a cheerleader, you can watch Nesson every night after the game. Okay, turn on Nesson Sports this after the game and you get cheerleaders. That's what they do there. It's fine, team-owned. You can get that. I'm not going to give you that. I'm going to try to give you an honest assessment of what they are. Okay, I've covered baseball a long time, and I think I've covered it the same way the whole time. I have raved about them at various points this year. They've had a couple of 6-game winning streaks that I looked at them and said, there it is. There it is. That's the ability. When David Price pitched against the Yankees, I sat here and I told you it's the best combination of stuff and command that I have seen him have in a Red Sox uniform. You didn't accuse me of being negative that night. So again, I'll give them their credit when they deserve it. When they deserve it. This team still largely has not played on it to its potential. It's on an 88-win pace. The division shouldn't even be this close if you want to give an honest assessment of it. So let's look at the team. And again, if you just want to wave the pom-poms, it's fine, really. It's okay. It's okay. You can get that every night on Nesson. Every night, Sports Desk, they will tell you all the good stuff that's going on with the team. That's why they call them highlights. You can get the highlights anywhere. To me, there are lowlights, too. And you're playing the White Sox right now. You're really going to celebrate that? Is that what's going to tickle your funny bone?
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com. This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
What is he doing? That had to have been some of the worst base running I have ever seen. What was he thinking?
It's time for the Baseball Reporters' base running blunders.
To the shortstop, trying to move up is Benintendi. base running mistake.
He's trying to be aggressive, but he knows that's a no-no.
So Benintendi out at third base. It did not get through.
And he hit it hard right in front of him. Obviously, you do not move. Ball's in front of you. You do not go to third.
Well, not a close play.
They've had some runners thrown out at the bases this year. You can't deny that. That's just a mistake.
Pretty sure the Red Sox lead the majors in that category.
Yeah, they do. That's, you know, aggressive is one thing. That's just a mistake.
Well, you're scoring position. You know, at second base.
Yep.
Over time, it'll come back. It'll come back. I'm convinced of that. What he wanted to say is, it's, you know, aggressive is one thing, and he stopped. What he wanted to say is, stupid is another. That play by Benintendi last night, trying to go to third on a ground ball in front of him, was stupid. The Red Sox got thrown out on the bases three more times last night. Now, in the same breath, Xander Bogaerts also made a good base running play, albeit with two outs, to score from first base on a double, made a hell of a slide. Okay, so it was an aggressive base running play, I think the right play with two outs, and he got in there. If he gets thrown out, we put him on the list of guys who's been thrown out of the plate. 59 guys now thrown out at the plate. Andrew Benintendi leads the team. I'm sorry, 59 guys thrown out on the bases. Andrew Benintendi leads the team with 10. Two of them last night. I'm starting to wonder about Benintendi's baseball aptitude and his baseball acumen. I think it is reasonable to ask that question. He's had bad base running now for 2 years. And remember in the playoffs last year, he fell asleep on a fly ball where a catcher tagged up from first to second in Cleveland, which isn't exactly the biggest ballpark in the world. A catcher. I'm trying to remember which catcher it was in that Indians lineup, because what's his name was hurt, right? Yan Gomes was hurt? It wasn't him. It was the other guy, whose name escapes me at the moment, but we all remember it. In any case, back to your calls. Again, to me, that's one of the issues with the Red Sox.
Was it Perez?
I think it was Perez, yeah. Yeah, it was Perez.
Or Mejia.
No, it was Perez.
Yeah, Perez, yeah.
Bob's on a cell phone. Bob, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, partner? That whole thing with Roger Clemens it made me just a little more stupid, unfortunately. He needs a better publicist. He needs something to get some more answers than what he gave you. Where I started and where it finished was completely in the same spot, unfortunately. My question to you is this, is that once you let him in, obviously Bonds is coming in, but what are you going to do with people like Rafael Palmeiro and some of the other steroid class?
So, Bob, I'll tell you what's an interesting question. Sarge, if you could check this out for me.
Go ahead.
Rafael Palmeiro, check his Hall of Fame percentages on the ballot.
Okay.
Is he off the ballot now? He might be.
You have
to get 5% to stay on. So, look, it's an interesting question. I hadn't considered it. Clemens and Bonds are both over 50% this year. In fact, their numbers have been almost identical in the 4 or 5 years they've been on. I think it's five now. Almost identical, which tells you people are treating them the same. Clemens is now at 54.1%. Bonds is at 53.8%. I mean,
he's off. He had 4.4 after 2014. Done.
So there you go. Palmeiro's only chance is the Veterans Committee. I don't think he's ever getting in. Raisin Revere.
Hey, listen, Tony. You said something today about them not being able to keep all their kids, and I actually think that's a mistake. If you look around baseball nowadays, the top players are getting brought under team control in their prime, and you buy out a few years extra after that. And, you know, I think that's actually what John Henry's setting up to do. He's trying to get under the luxury tax this year because I think he's going to go out and spend big to get these younger kids under contract. And in my opinion, if he needs to, he ought to move Price and Hanley Ramirez because those guys are a couple of stiffs.
Okay,
if he needs the money, he ought to spend it differently.
Okay, so, Ray, I don't think you're going to be able to move those guys. I mean, who's going to take Price's contract and who's going to take Hanley? Like, of course, yes, you'd move those in a second. And when I say they're not going to be able to sign their young guys, here's what I'm telling you. Bogaerts and Bradley are represented by Scott Boras. There was an estimate online earlier in the year. ESPN did a story on players under the age of 26, 25, I don't remember, who what the estimated value of a long-term contract would be if they were free agents right now. Bogaerts was close to $200 million. Betts was over $200 million. His number was in around 30. Bogaerts came in at 25 per. But even so, Bogaerts and Bradley are not going to sign their Boras clients. He won't sign them early. And they've tried with Betts and they couldn't sign him early. So this is the concern. It's not that they don't have the money or they don't want to do it. I think all these guys want to go to free agency. Mike is in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Mike.
How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
I just want to know if anyone else is as done with Heath Hembree as I am. The guy makes my blood curdle. When I see Weird Al Yankovic get up in the pen, I want to pull my hair out. It's ridiculous.
So, and, go ahead, Mike.
The second thing, real quick, you sandbagged Clemens on that last question. Goodbye.
I probably did. I mean, I felt compelled to ask it.
That's a great question.
You know, if I ask it at the beginning, we're not going anywhere.
No. So
I felt compelled to ask it at the end. It's not anything he's ever heard before or hasn't heard before. With regard to Heath Hembree, here's the good news, more good news about Addison Reed being here. Okay, Addison Reed pushes everybody back in the game or puts them in different spots. So you're going to get now, you know, Matt Barnes, Robbie Scott, all these guys in different parts of the game. Or so I thought until last night when I saw Addison Reed come in the seventh inning of that game. Did you guys catch this, Jimmy Stewart? Did you catch that? Addison Reed pitched a seventh inning last night, not the eighth?
Yeah, I thought he was the eighth inning guy.
Well, didn't you find that weird?
Yeah, and then he sent some BS excuse about matchups.
Okay.
Set up before Kimbrel.
I don't remember him doing that with Tozawa in 2013.
Okay, so two things here, and more than two things.
Tozawa, Okajima, that's how they won a world championship.
So first of all, this is the trend now in baseball. Everybody wants an Andrew Miller, which is great. It's great, A, if you have Andrew Miller, who's making $9 million a year and is effectively being paid closer money.
Well, the Red Sox did have Andrew Miller.
Okay, but also is willing to be moved around in various points of the game. Like, Andrew Miller's got a unique attitude, and he's got a manager who knows how to use him. So I'm not sure that the Red Sox have that in either case. Whether Reed can or wants to do it, or Farrell is capable of using him in such a way that it'll work. Now, Farrell said they've talked to Reed that they may use him in the seventh or the eighth, depending on where the matchups are, it'll be in one of those innings. It still scares the crap out of me to see Matt Barnes come in the eighth inning against any team, although the White Sox certainly qualify as a AAA outfit at the moment. But Yankee Stadium, eighth inning, who do you want on the mound? Matt Barnes, or do you want Addison Reed? And I'll take Addison Reed.
Oh, without question.
So the idea that Farrell's messing around with this a little bit concerns me, but this is what you're going to get. They want their own Andrew Miller because Terry Francona took Andrew Miller and shoved him down their throats last year in the playoffs. They want their own Andrew Miller. I hope Reed is as capable as Miller is. And remember, Miller could pitch two, even three innings at a time. I'm not sure Reed could do that. But they said the seventh or the eighth. And Francona knew how to use Miller. Francona's in-game sense, and I've said this a million times, Francona had a great feel for the game and for his players. He understood where the pressure points in games were. And so, hell, last year in the playoffs against the Red Sox, a perfect example. There was one game last year, I think, where he brought him in the fifth inning. In game one, didn't he bring him in the fifth inning?
Yes. You're right. It was game one at Cleveland, yes.
Okay, and that, to me, changed that game completely when Andrew Miller came in. Does Farrell really have that sort of feel or, you know, instinct for when to use a guy to identify the pressure point of a game? Because I'm not sure he does. JT is in Worcester. Go ahead, JT.
Hey, Maz. You had a couple callers before comment on how negative you were and all this stuff. And, you know, you and Felga and the rest of the crew in the afternoon nail it. You guys critique the players. You guys give them that Dennis Eckersley honesty. And, you know, a lot of people in this area can't handle it. They're so used to the winning. They don't remember when the Red Sox are just awful, and all the other teams are awful. And I just want to say thank you for giving spot-on criticism and keeping well-rounded.
Okay, did you have a point on the team, JT?
Not really. I mean, they look like they're doing all right, but they're playing against a rough team. They're playing against the White Sox, and they're terrible. But I would have loved to see them sweep the Indians coming off that 9-1 run. So we'll see. We'll see what goes on. They have a tough matchup going down with the Yankees. The Yankees have the pitching advantage, I think. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a dogfight, but I think you're right, but the Yankees winning the East.
JT, I appreciate the call. Jimmy, let's archive that call. It's not often we get someone calling to actually just compliment us. Usually it's someone with a point that says, oh, yeah, you guys are doing a good job. Let's move on. That guy actually called to compliment us.
That was good.
It's because you let the caller be polite. You're not... blah, blah, blah. Go. Get to your point. Rawr.
Well, I sometimes do that too, though, Jimmy. I have to plead. I got to plead guilty on that one. Nick is in Nashville. Go ahead, Nick.
Nick, go.
Thank you. thank you for taking my call, Tony.
Nick, get to your point now.
Good, you?
Question and comment for you, Tony. Comment is, I knew Rocket was pissed at you as soon as he called your partner three times in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, I kind of felt that vibe too, Nick.
Yeah. Question for you. I know that Justin Verlander is on revocable waivers. I don't understand why the Red Sox don't take the opportunity to try to get him as a fourth or a fifth starter as opposed to using someone like Eduardo Rodriguez or, you know, any Doug Fister, please. Please. I mean, I any day I'd rather have even a washed-up Justin Verlander over someone like Doug Fister.
So, Nick, look, I like Verlander, too. I mean, it's hard not to. Okay, I don't think he's having a great year this year. I haven't checked the numbers recently. The last time I looked, though, which was a few weeks ago, they weren't very good. And he's been a little inconsistent the last few years. Like, my recollection is last year he was good, the year before he wasn't. So he's been a little up and down. Even so, he'd be a good guy to take a gamble on. He's got balls, there's no question about it. He'd be happy to put him in there in a big game. He also has a big contract, big salary. And so you and I both know why he's not here. Because the Red Sox want to stay under luxury tax, which, again, is their right. Okay, it's their business. I just think that, really, they could pull off getting him here if they really wanted to. Okay, it's solely 100% about the money. Now, that said, Verlander made it through waivers, which means nobody claimed him. Right? Nobody wants that contract. And had a team put a claim in, the Tigers could have pulled him back and then tried to negotiate a trade with that team if they wanted. Or they could have let him go to that team that selected him. That didn't happen. So Verlander is now eligible to be traded to any team in baseball if someone's willing to give up the prospects. But you know what? He's not the only one. There are going to be a lot of guys that get through waivers here over the course of this month. And anybody who's traded this month and gets through is still eligible for the postseason with their new team. Once you hit September 1st, that's over.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.